Just Love on the Catholic Channel,
Sirius XM 129.
The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love, our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world from the perspective of our Catholic values. We look at the events that are all around us, and we don't just look at them as mere observers. We look at them as committed people, Catholics, Christians, who want to figure out how we look at those events through our Catholic values and what should our response be in terms of words and actions, opinions, perspectives. How do we see what's going on in the world? I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, grateful to be the host of this show every week. I'm grateful that Tom Dobbins is with us, who rounds up our guests for this show. And Marquisha is with us, who kind of lends her expertise and helping hand to us. So thank you for joining us again on Just Love. You know, this week we are going to be talking about the poor. And I have a little bit of a concern when we talk about, quote unquote, the poor. I think sometimes we might be speaking in a way that could, maybe unintentionally, but be a little condescending, you know? And so I think we have to be a little bit careful about that. And yet, at the same time, given the inequitable distribution of the world's goods, and not only worldwide, but even in our own country of the United States, we do have to recognize that there are those people who do not have even the basic necessities to live their lives in the dignity that is there, that is made in God's image and likeness. And, you know, we use kind of maybe a little bit of a shorthand, the poor, to refer to that group of our neighbors, our sisters and brothers, who, for whatever reason, do not have a fair share of the bounty of God's creation and God's goodness. But I always want to kind of be a little careful that we don't make this a we and a them. Those of us who are fortunate enough usually to have enough to eat, not that most people struggle with the issues of, you know, paying rent, of paying for kids' tuition, all of those things, medical expenses. So I'm not saying that everybody, that people have it easy. Most people are working hard and struggling to make ends meet. But at the end of the day, we're able to do it. But there are millions and millions in our world who don't, even at the end of the day, do not have enough. And, you know, the way that those resources are distributed means they live their lives, which is not as clear a reflection of them made in God's image and likeness as there should be. But before we get into that conversation a little bit more, Tom, we're kind of in the middle of November. How is fall going?
Fall's going very well, Monsignor. We actually have had a pretty mild fall. We had a few really cold days here in New York. But I mean, by and large, I think it's been, you know, particularly mild. I did get a chance just to wander just a little bit outside of New York City, as we talked about it on the last show, Monsignor. I went to go visit my folks. And although they don't live upstate, I know some people say they live in Westchester County, which is literally the county for our listeners above New York City. So that's right. Not upstate. But I did get a chance to see some of the foliage change, which is always nice. But I didn't get all the way upstate, which I sometimes like to do. So unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see a lot of the foliage. But, you know, I love this weather. I love the fall. I love the autumn. I love the colors. I love everything about it. And we're finally in sweater weather, Monsignor, which I'm grateful for, because I do. Okay. I do like my sweaters.
All right. But, well, you know, again, I'm going to complain a little bit, okay?
Okay.
Because I live in a church building, and church buildings tend to be older, although the one I live in is not terribly old, but it's one of those big old buildings, and how you heat them and how you cool them is always a challenge because there's always a lot of empty spaces. You oftentimes have big ceilings and you have big spaces, you have bedrooms, you have living rooms, you have kitchens, you have sanctuaries. It's kind of figuring out how you do that. And so my little complaint is that sometimes at this time of the year, it is actually colder inside the building than outside. And I have to tell you, I think I probably said this a little bit. I could never be a spy. Okay, never be a spy because all they would have to do is put me outside in the cold and I'd spill the beans on every single secret that I know. I just hate the cold. And the real reason why I like the winter, though, I really, really like the winter, especially for those of us who live in urban areas. We're outside usually for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, as we're going from one building to another or something like that. So one of the reasons I love the winter is to come inside when it's warm.
Yes.
So it's
I
kind of
agree with you, Monsignor.
a nice contrast that is there. But anyway, next week, Tom, I think maybe we'll talk a little bit more about Thanksgiving because it's coming up and a little bit of a preview. It is probably my favorite holiday of the year. I just love Thanksgiving, and there's so many good things about it. I think it's a really, really nice blend in a good way of some civil stuff and some religious stuff. Well, we'll talk more about it next week. But Tom, having said that, why don't we go to our first guest? Our first guest is Eric Clayton, who is the Deputy Director for Communications of the Jesuit Conference of Canada and the United States. Eric Clayton, thank you so much for joining us on Just Love today.
It's good to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Great. And so maybe why don't you begin by just giving us a little bit of your own history so that our listeners know a little bit about the person whose voice they are hearing today.
Sure, yeah. Well, I think as you said, I currently work at the Jesuit Conference. I'm on the communications team, and I'm a writer, so I've written a number of books on Ignatian spirituality and everyday living. Prior to my work with the Jesuits, I was at Catholic Relief Services, so I spent about 6 years working on C.R.S. Rice Bowl, in particular, and a couple other projects writ large. And so got kind of a firsthand look at, what the church does, how the church responds to just, some of the biggest needs all over the world. I got to travel and see some of that stuff firsthand, which is really powerful and really stays with me. To skip over a little bit, I graduated from Fairfield University, which is a Jesuit school in Connecticut, and after that, spent about a year in Bolivia, doing service work, teaching English. And so that was kind of what propelled me into the international studies world, which I got to experience at Catholic Relief Services, and then I did more and more storytelling work, which kind of has ultimately got me with the Jesuits now, doing communications and writing and filming and all sorts of fun things like that.
Eric, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Maybe you could also now tell our little bit of our listeners, what is a Jesuit Conference of Canada and the United States? I think most people understand the Jesuit order, but what's the conference about?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and it's always kind of a tricky answer because we're really talking about church bureaucratic institutions. I think the best, probably easiest way for folks to think about the Jesuit conference is to kind of compare it to the USCCB, right? The Conference of Bishops. In the same way that a Jesuit province kind of occupies a certain region and the various apostolates that are in it, so schools and nonprofits and other works like that. All those provinces are like a diocese in that way. And then the provinces are part of the conference. And so our conference is made up of five provinces: the province of Canada, province of Jesuits West, Jesuits in the Midwest, Jesuits in the Central Southern region, and then Jesuits East, which runs all the way from Maine down to Georgia. So those provinces then all fall under our conference. And when the provincials, right, the individuals who lead the provinces gather, that then constitutes the conference, and they make decisions that affect the whole region. The conference, though, then liaisons with Rome. And so we have a number of our fellow Jesuit conferences around the world. And so we'll meet and gather for different things, particularly in the communications world. You know, what are the important stories to be telling now? How can we be, helping people understand both the Jesuits, but Ignatian spirituality writ large? And we're situated in the communications department. So that's what the conference is. It doesn't issue documents in the same way that the USCCB does. It's really more of a capacity building or a coordinating entity that exists to really serve the individual provinces, which then exists to serve the individual apostolates and the people that are affected.
Great. Eric, thank you so much. I think that is a very clear understanding, and I guess to just paraphrase a little bit what you're saying is, you know, there are a bunch of different jurisdictions for the Jesuits in North America, Canada, and the United States, not including Mexico. And this is kind of the coordinating group, or the group that tries to get together to kind of make sure that everybody's on the same page, maybe tries to share best practices, and tries to kind of build up the individual conferences by coming together. So thank you so much for that. So one of the things that particularly I'd like to kind of have a little conversation with you about, given some of the work that you've done, and let me ask it very, very kind of generically. We will, maybe you could tell our help our listeners a little bit. We're going to be celebrating this weekend World Day of the Poor. And that is kind of a relatively new Sunday that Pope Francis kind of put on the calendar of Catholics throughout the world. Can you share with our listeners a little bit, what is the World Day of the Poor and how did that come about?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think as we saw, right, with Pope Francis, this reminder for all of us as a church to return to that kind of essential gospel call, right, to the preferential option for the poor. How are we going out to encounter Christ in one another, and particularly in those who are most vulnerable, most marginalized? And so I think that this opportunity to really celebrate it every year as part of the liturgical calendar is that, again, that connection. What we do here at Mass is actually supposed to propel us out to those who are on the margins, to those who are in most need. Our faith isn't something that, you know, is tidy and contained, to Sunday, but in fact spills over into everything that we're doing each and every day. And I think Francis, you know, pointed to that again and again and again throughout his papacy. I think we see that in the early days of Pope Leo here, and certainly in centering our prayer lives, our church life around the needs of those who are most vulnerable is essential to living out the gospel and to really seeing what Jesus is about, right? So I think it's just that, it's that anchoring of our spirituality in a wider sense of community, a wider sense of church family, who needs our attention, and that those are the most vulnerable among us. And so it makes sense that we would name that as part of our church year.
So we're speaking with Eric Clayton, who is the Deputy Director for Communications for the Jesuit Conference of Canada and the United States. So let's move a little bit more broadly, and Pope Leo the 14th did a recent letter, and in the letter he kind of talked about, he was kind of finishing up a letter that was begun by Pope Leo. Can you tell us a little bit about the letter that he wrote?
Yeah, so the latest apostolic exhortation, his first, right, is this really, I mean, just beautiful bridge between Pope Francis and Pope Leo. Francis began it, right? Francis wanted to offer it as kind of a part two of his last apostolic exhortation. And so Leo picks it up, and he says it, I mean, quite beautifully right at the beginning, something to the effect of, I'm pleased to be able to complete this document and to add my own reflections, right? So you really know that it's Leo is standing in the same line as Francis was, and going forward, and it's just this wonderful, it almost feels like a literature review of the church's work with the poor, contextualizing this moment, but putting it in the span of history. In short, right, De Lexi Te is a reminder of everything we just talked about with the World Day of the Poor. You know, hey, if you're going to live the gospel, you have to remember the poor. You have to go out to the marginalized and the vulnerable. And it's not just a matter of giving some money or of showing up on Advocacy Day. It's actually a matter of having an encounter, right? That's what Leo was saying, right in line with Francis. And he goes through the sweeping history, from the Old Testament all the way up to like our modern day saints, and saying, hey, see how people have done this again and again and again, be they saints, be they, gospel figures, be they popes, be they ordinary, women and men. Caring for the poor has been a consistent through line, or a consistent call, at least, in the entire history of the church. Whether we've always responded as best we can, that's a different question. But the call has always been there, and there have always been people responding in their own times and places, and based on their own experiences, to this call of the poor. And so that's what Leo is really inviting us to, is to put, I think, to put ourselves in that beautiful line of history, and say, okay, well, how am I being invited to respond to this inherent gospel call? How am I being invited to meet Christ in folks that are on the margins, folks that are vulnerable? And what might then happen when I do? One of the things that I just love that Leo points out is that the poor, quote unquote, the poor are not just objects to be gone to, right? But are in fact also, we have to remember, made in the image and likeness of God. They too are having an experience of God that we need to learn from, that there's something there for us too in our own spiritual lives, that this isn't a one-way street, that this is an experience, an encounter. Again, Francis said this, again and again and again, and Leo just beautifully, just welcomes us into this sweeping history in which we can find ourselves, meeting that same challenge.
So, Eric, let me ask you a little bit of what I would call an exegetical question. So Leo clearly says, Pope Francis began this, I'm continuing it, blah, 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 blah. You've been around this for a while. Can you detect the Francis parts, the Leo parts, and how would you say they're different?
That's a great question. I know as I was reading it, Francis had, I don't know if I'm going to be able to pinpoint, specific lines, but Francis had I think one of the things that was really amazing about Francis's writing was it was very approachable. It was very easily understood, right? It wasn't this kind of high, dense theology, but he also had these turns of phrase that were a little like kind of wonky, these big piles of garbage, and they were very colorful, very specific. You could really kind of put yourself in the scene, and I think sometimes those are really just wonderful ways to imagine, and sometimes I think they trip people up, honestly. People are like, wait, what am I supposed, what is this word in this church document? I don't detect as much of that, honestly, in this exhortation, but I do love, so I miss that in some ways, because I love, as a writer, I love those kind of colorful, creative ways of inviting us into a scene. But I do really love how Pope Leo goes through it's infinitely accessible. If Francis's writing was accessible, I think Leo's is even more so. He says what he means. He goes through. He says, a concrete commitment to the poor must also be accompanied by a change in mentality that can have an impact at the cultural level. There's no guessing what that means. Oh, okay, I have to change how I'm thinking about the wider culture and how we embrace the poor, right? And I appreciate that. So it feels to me, reading it, and praying with it, that it has the heart of Francis, but it has the delivery of Leo in some ways. Now, I would love to know which lines Leo wrote and which ones Francis wrote, but that's my feeling of it as a reader.
So I think that's really good, and it's really hard to know, I guess. knowing a little bit about how sometimes church documents are written and a little bit how sometimes church leaders speak, I think Leo goes out of his way in the beginning is to say, basically, you know, Francis kind of wrote this and I'm just adding a little bit of my own. I think what that probably means, and pardon me, it means that there's four sentences of Francis and the rest of it is Leo, but he's kind of, you know, he's pivoting to the right and going to the left, but who knows what is there. But on a broader issue, not so much this, but what would you see as some of the differences between Leo and Francis, maybe particularly with regard to their concern for or their highlighting the poor?
Well, I mean, kind of beyond this document, I know, you know, from Pope Francis, I mean, we all remember, right? There were these just arresting images right out of the gate when he began that, you know, he literally embracing the poor, you know, and really going, really doing the thing he's talking about, right? I'm going to go to Lampedusa. I'm going to embrace this, you know, individual in St. Peter's Square who is, you know, suffering from, you know, this kind of skin illness. And so I think we have that visual of Francis that was, we don't quite have the same with Leo. You know, I don't know if we want the same, though. These are different men and these are different. The church is full of a lot of different kinds of people, right, with different ways of proceeding. Some are extravagant and flashy, and some are a little quieter, but you know, kind of doing the work, you know, keeping the trains running, right? And so I think in that regard, you know, what do we see with Leo? We see him, you know, constantly beating the drum for peace, right? I mean, not that Francis didn't, but so many of those initial remarks that Pope Leo made when he came out of, you know, the balcony in those early days, and then even, you know, in this document, you're making that connection between, hey, if we want to care for those who are on the margins, we need to stop, you know, we need to stop blowing up their villages. We need to stop arming, you know, people all over the world. We need to be building something and not knocking things down. And I really appreciate that emphasis, because that, I mean, you know, nothing traps people in poverty quite like war and all the follow-on effects of violence. I think Leo also is not, again, Francis began this in a lot of ways, but he's also drawing our attention to AI and to kind of technological changes. That's going to revolutionize how we work, how we interact with people, how we communicate. You know, I think, again, Leo had one of those early days, great lines to kind of Vatican communicators, you know, that communication also is a way to build peace. And this stuff is, I think what I appreciate with the way that Pope Leo is proceeding, again, not that Francis wasn't, but it's just we're living in this moment now, right? I feel like this stuff is more and more being woven together. The way we talk to one another and communicate and see one another, the way we build up peace or build up violence, this has to do with the poor. Right? I mean, this has to do with the systems that are trapping people in cycles of violence, cycles of poverty, cycles of oppression. It's all connected. And I think the church has always had the tools, the social teaching to draw our attention to that. But I do think that Leo in this moment is really kind of pulling, you know, tying the knot in a way that is really helpful.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I thought that many of the commentators didn't emphasize enough with Pope Leo's encyclical on the environment, Laudate Si, is that it wasn't, and Tom and I talk about this a whole lot, it wasn't merely a tree hugger document. His whole emphasis in, or a major theme of his emphasis, was that environmental problems impact the poor more than they impact other people. And so once again, I think his theme of raising up how various aspects of the world impact the poor was a particular kind of perspective that he brought to it. It wasn't just the environment for the environment's sake, albeit as good as that might be. It was how, when we don't take care of the environment, it's those who are poor and marginalized who suffer the most.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, right, Francis reminded us of the integral ecology, right? And that we're, everything is connected, necessarily so, right? I mean, that goes back to so much of Catholic social teaching, right? Our call to solidarity, our call to the common good, everything is connected. And I think that's something that's so important. And I think, again, I'm looking through the document here, Leo hits on, integral human development as well, right? Which again, was a term I think, we saw in the Vatican documents of Vatican II or Gaudium et Spes, right? Popes have been talking about the integral nature of the human person, and that, that means all of God's creation. We can't thrive if everything around us is dead or dying, right? We need the full flourishing of all of creation, because all of creation is where God dwells and God and reflects God. Again, I work for the Jesuits, and so I'm always in the language of God being in all things. God, everything can God wants to speak to us through all things. But if we're letting things die, if we're letting things decay, if we're not protecting, be it the trees or be it, communities of people, we're losing God's voice in some way. And that should upset us at the very least.
We're speaking with Eric Clayton, who is the Deputy Director for Communications for the Jesuit Conference of Canada and the United States. Eric, let me kind of ask you to reflect a little bit on your own experience. In Canada and the United States are, among the more developed countries of the world. The median income is higher than almost every other country in the world. And yet, in the midst of our country, there is significant amount of poverty and poor people. And I think we tend to concentrate on that and how we need to be fairer with regard to making sure that the poor have what are needed. But let me ask you this, from your time in Bolivia, what did your time in Bolivia teach you about maybe how the poor are different, their circumstances might be very different in different countries? What did you take away from that experience?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I have a couple thoughts come to mind. One, if we're talking about Bolivia, one of the things I loved about and still do love about Bolivia is it's such a collision of so many cultures, so many ways of being. There's so many different, I think there's like 27, 28 official languages, and there's different altitudes, right? There's vastly different ecosystems all in this one country, which is not a terribly large country. And it's a landlocked country. So your experience of, of poverty, of course, but of just your experience in general is going to be reflective of this kind of collision of so many different ways of proceeding. And that's something to be learned from. And also it can be a real tinderbox, for violence and conflict. One of the things that I think about when I think about poverty, and I'm gonna lean into the Ignatian spirituality stuff because it's my bread and butter. But St. Ignatius of Loyola, right, who was the founder of the Jesuits, he writes the spiritual exercises, and the key meditation in his exercises, which is this 4-week retreat, is something called the two standards, and it's a spiritual trajectory. And Ignatius says, the enemy of our human spirit, right, Satan, the devil, what have you, tempts us to pride by way of honors and money and wealth, inordinate wealth. And Father, great Father Joe Tetlow, who's Jesuit in the central southern region, he talks about, he kind of condenses that to mean the enemy says, look at all the stuff I have, look at me with all this stuff, look at me. And so there's that path to, always trying to grab more and more and more, more money, more honors, just stuff we don't need, ultimately brings the spotlight on ourselves rather than on other people, our community, and God. The other direction, the standard of Christ, invites us to go the opposite way, right? A path of poverty, humility, poverty, rejection, and humility, right? Which doesn't sound great, except it's this letting go of stuff so that we can then enter into community and be and necessarily lean on one another. We can't do it alone, right? I think as the Pope lays out in De Lexi Te, we have this history of people who have done it together. And so embracing these necessary limitations of our human condition, humility, right, allows us to live together in a better way. I say this because whenever I think of poverty, right? Poverty is not a good, of course not. But Ignatius in the spiritual exercises invites us to practice this holy indifference, this sense of, you know, what is God asking me to be? I want to make myself available to the kind of life God has put before me, so that I can best serve God in whatever circumstances I find myself in. We can't do that if we're trying to constantly cling for more stuff, constantly looking at ourselves. But the more we let go, the more we necessarily find ourselves with other people, we have less to cling to and to try and control, and a deeper, a better availability to respond to the moment. So I say that because I think so many people will say, you know, in these kind of conditions of poverty, they're struck by the difference of life or of priorities and stuff. And again, poverty is not a good. People suffer and struggle and that's you know, full stop. But I think what people often are struck by is that, you know, in our, as you said, Monsignor, in our society, right, you know, we have so much stuff. There's so much to cling to. There's so much to distract us from other people and their needs that we are struck when suddenly that stuff is taken away and all we have are one another and our relationships. So I don't know if that quite answers your question, but I think that really came to life in Bolivia and certainly in the travels I've done since then as I'm, you know, in other communities with kind of different ways of proceeding.
So Eric, before I let you go, and you've been very generous with your time, I want to push you on one particular area. You are a word which, when I was young 4 million years ago, never even knew there was a phrase, content creator. But you know, I do think we've been talking about, quote unquote, the poor. And I think early on, you may have talked about kind of human interest and stories and stuff like that. You know, is there a particular way or story that you could tell that brings home to us the importance of being concerned about the poor? Is there a human interest story that you're aware of or that you tell that really helps us to grasp the theory, which we've talked a lot about today?
Yeah, you know, I the first story that comes to mind was from one of my travels with Catholic Relief Services. We were in Vietnam, and we were there to kind of walk with a family who was kind of doing some of the CRS programming, we were going to go out into the rice fields to pick. They're looking for snails. It was a source of protein, but before we did that, I remember seeing. I mean, this was, again, kind of this family, you know, was really living day to day. And well, actually, while we were there, the mother got very sick. And so it just totally kind of kneecapped their ability to do the production, to get the snails, to get stuff to market. And so this was a precarious lifestyle. But I remember being particularly struck. I mean, you can say there's the story, right? The story is there. Look at this family. They're suffering. But because of a little bit of goodwill and charitable resources from the United States and Catholic Relief Services, things are going well. Or better than they could be. That's not untrue. But I was struck very deeply by, there was a, they had a, I don't know, maybe a 7 or 8 year old girl, daughter in the family. And she every morning would wake up early and ride her bike to school, to like the first school. This was a bonus opportunity for education. She would also pick up medication for her parents, and then she would come back. And then she would go to another school later in the day. And I remember this just kind of blazed into my mind, her bike leaning up against the house and thinking, wow, that is, here I am in Vietnam, kind of in the farmlands, you know, rice paddies, you know, very, you know, devastating poverty on a knife's edge when a storm comes through. But look at this bike leaning up against this wall. I have daughters. I have bikes leaning up against the wall outside my house. The image is the same. And if the image is the same, you know, they're living vastly different lives. And yet, what do I hope for my kids? Well, I hope that they also go and get an education and care enough about learning that they will wake up early to do it, right? I hope that they, you know, take care of me, sure, but like, you know, other people, you know, going and getting medicine and bringing stuff back. You know, I hope they're up and out at, you know, day to day. And I just remember, again, it's easy, as you implied, Monsignor, this idea of like the poor, and it's you know, it's not the best phrasing, right? It's very easy to kind of aggregate and distance. But when we have these images, that just connect us. Like, oh my gosh, like that's my life too. I see myself here. We aren't so different. We have the same values. We want the same things for our kids, for our communities. Those kinds of images, I think, really facilitate that encounter that Pope Francis and now Pope Leo are imploring for us, but also remind us that, again, we're all in this together. We're all connected. We all are probably more similar, being made in the image and likeness of God, than we think.
Eric, thank you so much for your generosity and time, and thanks for the work that you are doing, important work. And thank you for your energy and your doing that. Eric Clayton, Deputy Director for Communications, Jesuit Conference of Canada and the United States. Thanks for being with us on Just Love.
Thank you.
Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We'll take a break now and we'll be back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Now let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome back to Just Love. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world through the perspective of our Catholic values. You know, this week, because we are right on the eve of the celebration of World Day of the Poor, in which Pope Francis began this for the Universal Church, probably a decade or so ago, maybe a little bit less, we are kind of raising up some of the issues that relate to those of our neighbors who are poor, who don't have enough economic resources. And so as our next guest, I am delighted that Taina Rodriguez is with us, who is the Associate Director of Food and Dignity Programs at Part of the Solutions, which is an affiliated agency of Catholic Charities located in New York City in the Bronx. And Taina, thank you so much for joining us on Just Love today. Taina, maybe you want to unmute yourself so we can hear you.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. Hey. Thank you for inviting me. Happy Friday.
Yep. Well, happy sad day for our listeners. So
ooh, okay.
They're going to hear us tomorrow, not today. So okay. Anyway, but thank you for being with us. Taina, they can hear your voice, but tell them a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you got to where you are, and so they get a little sense when we talk about some of the issues, who you are.
Sure. So I was actually born in Brooklyn. And then within months, my family moved to Puerto Rico. So my first 7 years was raised in Puerto Rico. So I first came to the Bronx when I was seven, scared, did not know a lick of English at all. Everything was Spanish, but gracefully in the Bronx, we have a beautiful community that has a diverse language. So it helped me through school. It helped me through, you know, learning English. I barely can speak Spanish now, even though it's my first language. And then, you know, my mom, unfortunately, she was a single mom of five, which she really struggled. She also suffered from mentally ill, so it did not allow a pathway for schooling or working, which left her depending on public benefits and raising us that way. So that's my beginning before I get introduced to POTS, which is at the root cause, which most people come to nonprofits for, is the root cause is poverty. So that was my family.
Taina, thank you. Taina, thank you so much. So how'd you get familiar with POTS?
So some of 1993, my mom was really, really struggling, you know, to keep food on the table. It was summer. We were getting out of school. You know, she was trying to wonder how she was going to keep food on the table. And we had a neighbor that, you know, just said, like, why don't you take them to the restaurant on Webster Avenue, you know, and they'll help you. And that's how we got introduced. Like me and my brothers, we honestly did not know it was a nonprofit. We did not know it was for free. And she would just tell us every single day, like, we're going to the restaurant. And we would come and get service. And that's how I got introduced to POTS.
Ah, And so for our listeners who are not from New York, New York City, as some may know, some may not know, is actually kind of five different counties that are part of New York City. We call them boroughs, but they're actually counties. You know, in most parts of the country, the cities are smaller than the counties, but in New York City, the city is made up of five counties. And what Taina mentioned is she was born in one of the counties, Brooklyn. Then she went to Puerto Rico and she came back to another county in the Bronx. And that's kind of where she was introduced to part of the solution, POTS. So let's go a little bit further. You were 11. Were you in school at that time?
I was in school. I remember speaking to my mom and saying, the only thing that I can do is maybe try to find a part-time job and help you. And one of the days that we were coming here waiting online to eat, as you know, we were gonna sit down, I asked the host, like, can I work? You know, like, I need to help my mom. And the gentleman's like, come on Saturday. And I did come, and that's when I realized the reality of the situation, I guess. It was an eye opener. But I just loved it. I loved to see that that many people were being serviced in a dignified way, not shamed upon because you needed food. And I started volunteering, and then eventually I scored a job, and I have never left. I just loved it, and I wanted to create the impact. They took my family in. They went beyond food. They tackled other issues. They connected my mom to mental health. They helped my brothers with Christmas and presents and things, and just alleviated, a peace of mind when we went home. And that was something that I was like, I want to be a part of this. I don't want to do anything else with my life.
Ah, well, that is great. So, were you going to school in the Bronx?
Yes, I'm actually between the Fordham and Bedford area, and I went to elementary, junior high, and high school
Where'd
within
you go to
the
high
same
school? Where'd you go to
John
high
F.
school?
Kennedy.
Ah, in the Bronx.
Yes.
Okay. So let's move forward a number of years. Now you are the Associate Director of Food and Dignity Programs. Tell our listeners what that means.
So I oversee our both food security programs. That's our food pantry, which is open 6 days a week. We do supermarket style and prepackaged. And then we have a community dining room that is open 6 days a week and is run restaurant style and to-go model for a hot meal. And then I also oversee our dignity and wellness programs, which include meal services, showers, haircut, and a collaboration with Care Found Here, which is another organization that provides medical, dental, and mental health.
So you oversee a lot.
Yes.
You're a big shot.
Luckily, I
The
have great volunteers and I have other staff. It's not
okay.
just me.
Okay. So Taina, you did talk about this a little bit, but you know, the title, Associate Director of Food and Dignity Programs, that's not a very common title. You know, we talk about managers, we talk about housing, we talk about mental health, but we don't often talk about dignity programs. Say a little bit about that. I mean, you began to talk about it, but I do think from our Catholic perspective, that is a very, very important aspect of the help that is provided. So say some more about that.
It actually just it comes from our values and our mission, and it goes beyond just a service, right? People come to you, it takes a lot for them to have to ask for help. So the one thing you make sure that people can keep is their dignity, their respect. You're not a number, you're a human being, you're in a situation. And the reason we call it dignity and wellness programs is because these are essential things that any human being needs on a daily basis. That shower, somewhere to receive your mail, having mental health, a community, like where to eat. Like these are A lot of people think that people are, it's an entitlement. It's not. It is a need. It's a basic human reality. So what we try to do is provide the platform to remind people that there's hope, that you don't need to be judged, that your situation today does not define tomorrow. And a lot, and that goes to our core values. Anybody can do what we do. It's how we do it that sets us apart.
Am I know I know a little bit about the program at Part of the Solutions POTS. You also, do you still provide some haircuts?
Yes, so that is part of our dignity and wellness is the haircuts, the mail services, the shower program, and then the connection to Care Found Here, which is the
So,
medical.
Taina, I have to ask you this. I mean, our listeners can't see us, but I don't really need a haircut, but do you also do beard cuts?
Yes.
Okay, then I can come. Then I can come. I don't need a haircut, but I need a beard cut. So, can you say a little bit from your experience? Can you share with us? I know you told your own personal story, which was very, very wonderful that you were willing to do that. But for our listeners, can you maybe share a few stories of some of the individuals who you've met over the years, and how the work that POTS has done has kind of touched them, has, treated them with dignity, but how it has also, empowered them maybe to take a little bit more initiative in their lives.
So I mean, many come to mind. I've been here for over 30 years, so I've seen a lot, but I can tell you from different perspective. We are open to all as a community, right? So we don't have a target population, and that can be anywhere from a single mom trying to feed her children to a single male individual who's street homeless, to families with mothers and fathers, to people that are seeking employment and other things. So there's an array. There's just not one bucket here. But one guy that always like takes my heart is a gentleman who would come to us every single day to take a shower and get a meal. And it took so much an effort to just get him to open up to us. We wanted to know his story. We wanted to know, like, hey, is there anything else? Part of our vision is to make sure that you're just not coming here and just getting a service, right? We just don't want to put a band-aid on it. We want to talk to you. We want to know what are your goals? Where do you want to be? Do you want to change the situation? And a lot of that is cultivating a relationship with that individual, right? And the gentleman finally, it took us about 2 years. He finally started opening up. Come to find out, he was street homeless, which by the look, you would never know. This man was always dressed so nicely. I mean, his clothes was always ironed, beautiful haircuts. And it was just like, wait, what do you mean you're sleeping? And he would go every day to POTS, take a shower, eat, and then afterwards would go to a building, go to the roof, and he slept there. And we did not know this. And eventually, we connected him to other services. Our biggest one was connecting him to our social worker, who actually was able to get him to do a psychological and psychosocial because although he suffered from mentally illness, he was not diagnosed. And without the diagnosis, we could not connect him. So she worked with him. And I'm telling you, this was almost 4 years it took to get the whole process going and help him and for him to trust us. Clearly, the world had failed him, but he needed to trust. And that took a lot and a lot of moving pieces. And finally, he was able to get approved. He got his supportive housing. However, he was so used to the lifestyle, it took him a whole year before he actually slept in his bed. And that to me has always been like one of my stories that I'm like, just like, it's amazing. Like, this is the process. Like, a lot of people do not know it's not as easy as to say, like, here and your life is better. It's like, this is a whole process mentally, physically. Like, it's a lot. And now the gentleman, he doesn't need us anymore at all. He just comes back just to say hi, make sure we're still here, make sure he sends people to us. And that's what motivates us. It's stories just like that. We have people who come to us and 3, 6 months, they got a couple of service, they got connected, they're fine and they can move on. And then we have others that we have to work really hard over and over and over again. We have people that will come and go through our employment mentorship. We have mothers like, I don't know how to do this application for my children for college, and our mentoring team takes care of that because we have a group of people that we go in depth with and work with the whole household, not just one individual that's saying, I'm facing this. So it's many different buckets, but these are the stories that we're hearing. We get to see graduations. We get to see people go off to college. We have an entrepreneur program. We see people who move from being on online to actually owning a business. Like, this is what we see, and this is what we thrive on.
Taina Rodriguez from part of the solutions pots in one of the boroughs of New York City, the Bronx. Gee, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love, but thank you even more for the work that you do every day with some of our neighbors, our sisters and brothers who maybe need a helping hand in order to live their lives in greater dignity. So thanks for what you do.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and listening.
Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We'll be back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Just do it. Just love. Just check out Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, who's here right now. Take it away, Monsignor.
Welcome back to Just Love, and thank you for being with us. This weekend, our Catholic Church throughout the world is celebrating the World Day of the Poor. And as we've heard today, we're not talking about the poor. We're talking about our sisters and brothers, individuals who don't have what is needed oftentimes to live their lives in dignity. Maybe not a decent place to live, maybe no place to live. Maybe a rooftop. People don't have sufficient food for themselves and their families. So we're not talking about the poor. We're talking about our neighbors who don't have enough. So we raise it up this weekend. We keep those in need in our prayers, and we kind of commit ourselves as individuals and as the community of faith to not forgetting those who are on the margin, those who don't have enough. And we make a commitment to try to work for a world in which there is a fairer, more equitable distribution of the bounty of God's creation. Thanks for being with us on Just Love. We'll be back again next week on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
You're listening to the Catholic Channel,
SiriusXM 129.